Hello, everyone. Welcome to Outcomes of Sun Radio. You're listening to Marielle Hemingway. That's me. And Melissa Yamaguchi. That's my wonderful co-host. Today, what are we going to talk about today? What's our news?
Marielle, this is kind of intriguing. Listen to this. People are motivated to try a vegetarian diet for different reasons, from ethical and religious to potential health and environmental benefits. But many people have a hard time sticking with it. In fact, studies show many self-reported vegetarians actually do consume some animal products. A lot of people who want to be vegetarian are perhaps not able to. We wanted to know if genetics was a part of the reason, said Dr. Nabil Yazin of Northwestern University. So this doctor compared the DNA of about 330,000 people. They found that 34 genes that may play a role in adhering to a strict vegetarian diet. They identified three genes that are more tightly linked to the trait. What we can say is that these genes have something to do with vegetarianism. What? So your ability to be vegetarian may be gene dependent. And let me clarify that. Let me be very clear about the University of Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine.
Well, it kind of, you know, and Bobby has always said this, not being a scientist, not being a doctor, but he has always said this. And we are of the belief that it really is, we say it's your genetics, it's your heritage, it's your blood type, it's the place you live, it's the season. It's all of these things make up how you're supposed to eat. That's why it's not one size fits all when it comes to eating. So I find that I'm sure when you see it, there are some people that are just thrive, right? I have a friend in Idaho who is vegan. She absolutely thrives. There are other people that are friends that have become vegan or whatever, and they don't thrive. You can see them not thriving. You see them losing weight, not having energy. That was my situation. I loved the idea of being vegan, like the whole spiritual aspect of it. And, you know, and I loved animals and I felt like I was doing right in the world. And yet I was not healthy. It was not, I looked healthy, you know, and I could fake it, but I had no energy. I was so anyway. And so my belief is, you know, you find that which works for you, and then you're ethical about your choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people don't understand what that means. Like, what does that mean? Well, that just means that you don't need to eat red meat all the time, unless it is grass-fed, grass-finished, and you know where it comes from, right? And if you can make that distinction in a chicken that is free range, in eggs that are actually, you know, from a hen that gets to not walk on, you know, in a circle on a piece of cement, but actually gets to walk in a field or on grass. Those are choices. And sadly, what makes me sad about saying this, it seems to be people with, you know, with the ability and the money to be able to buy that food. And I'm heartbroken that we don't make healthy food accessible to everybody.
Everybody.
It's a heartbreaking, you know, but that's just it's the weird way of the world. And it shouldn't be that way, because you look at the obesity crisis in our country and, you know, it has a lot to do with people's ability to buy good food. So they're like, yeah, but look, if I go to a fast food place three times a day, I only spend, you know, $10 for three meals or something. I don't know what the prices are, but I know that it's cheap food is bad food.
It's bad for you. The thing is, you can't help but fall into the thought of, okay, so it's all money. Yeah, money makes the world go round. We've got to have it. But how are we not able to financially benefit from people being healthy? You know, there are countries where you do wellness checkups, you go to the doctor to stay well, and you get a better rate. You get better rates on your insurance company by being healthier. Because it's like $30 a day. So you could do a minimal amount at breakfast and then 10, 12 at lunch and dinner if you were doing fast food. So about 10 bucks a meal, I'm sorry, 30 bucks a day, maybe for one. And so if you're thinking you're a single mom who's got two or three kids and you can slap a couple of quick chicken McNuggets into them and then get home, not thinking quickly enough that you don't have vegetables for them, that maybe those apple slices aren't enough instead of fries, whatever. But it's so much easier on your wallet. Yeah, we've done a lot. And we've done a lot to really sidetrack people's good health. And you can't help but fall into the thought, as I started to say, that it's all tied into our insurance companies and yeah. everybody else who benefits from us not being healthy. So you do, and if we learn nothing.
Look at, and then you go deeper. My friend Robin O'Brien, she's tremendous with looking at, you know, like pesticides and this and that and the food. And, you know, the agriculture and agribusiness is huge, and it's a monopoly in this country. And, you know, it's the one of the most traded things on the stock market.
Absolutely.
And all
absolutely,
and
it is.
Money, and like you said, money gets behind it, and then nobody's caring about
no. And
it, the health that, well, and the wellness. And
that brings me a lot of, well, it brings me pain because I come from a family of farmers, and
yeah.
my grandfather and grandmother and my uncles are no longer alive, but they were so fastidious about farming the land and being so respectful of the soil and not turning the crops over too quickly so that nutrients and minerals could enrich and back into the soil before you brought in a new crop. And, you know, we're in California where there's a lot of really amazing agriculture, but man, they turn those crops over one after the other after the other. The soil doesn't get a chance to breathe. But this whole thing about there being some genetic predisposition, and there one of the findings they found in this study was that they were saying, well, it's a slippery slope and it's a tricky line to walk, because there are some reports in this study that suggest that some bodies genetically break down lipids faster than others. Well, does that, then they're saying, where does that lead us? If there's more lipids in your blood because your body's not breaking it down, does that concept have any tie-in to the way people are satiated by food? Let me explain that, because that sounded like a bunch of mishmash. Certain people are triggered by certain foods. Some people can't just eat one Lay's potato chip. Some people can eat one and go, yeah, I'm done, and push the bag away. Are the people who are more inclined to overeat or to be turned on eating wise by food and not be able to be satiated, is that a blood type? Is that something in their blood? If their body doesn't break down lipids, are they more inclined to eat the greasy French fries or whatever it is? So it's blowing up to an incredibly expansive study, and it's pretty intriguing.
Yeah, it is very intriguing. And you know, when I think about myself, and you know, because I make it about me. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, alrighty then.
I'm just gonna make it about me. No, but you know, because we can only go with our own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And so I have tried so many different diets, because, and the reason I tried all those diets, because this is a show about mental health, was because I thought if I could control food and my body, then I could control how my brain was, because I spent a lifetime so afraid that I was going to end up like my family, like I was going to be mentally unstable or something. Anyway, so I've tried all these different diets, and I was very manic with these diets. Yeah. I was very, like, I would become obsessed, but they were very extreme, whether it was, you know, in the 80s, and there was no fat, right? That was a big thing, that you're right. Nobody ate fat. It was like, it was so taboo. It was awful, awful, awful. And then, you know, whatever it was, whatever kind of extreme thing I would go to,
yeah,
I had no brain balance. Like I had no, I obsessed over food. I was so, it would literally bring me to tears at times, because I couldn't stop thinking about it, right? It was such an addict behavior. Now, the reason why I'm bringing that up is that once I got back to the way I was when I was a kid, and I was brought up eating really good food, very balanced, because my mother was a very good cook, and it was, you know, it was a starch and a, you know, and a protein and this, not a lot of sugar, but very good food. My mother was a fantastic cook, and we ate very, very well, but it was very balanced. It was very normal, right? It was yeah. like normal food, but it was real food, as Bobby calls it, jerf, just to eat real food, right? And it was just real food. When I went back to that in my 40s, when I finally got back to that, I had a doctor that said, you know, you don't have enough fat for your brain and this and that. And I was so scared of fat. And he said, I really think that you should try eating animal protein. I think it's going to serve you well. And I really was hesitant. It really was hard for me. I really thought, oh my God, I'm scared. I was scared. I literally, because I had made up this idea that it was all, you know, it made me a better person, you know, like I, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I slowly made my way back. And for a while it was a little bumpy and I was still thinking about food. And then all of a sudden, when I really became balanced with food, when I was really just eating what I wanted, mm-hmm. when I wanted, when I was hungry, it all, the noise in my brain went away. Because my body was getting what it needed. So something yeah. tells me that, yes, there are probably lipids and this and that and all these different messaging. But at the same time, it's this discovery of what makes me tick the best, right? How was I when I was a kid? When did I feel great when I was a child?
Yeah, right? But we are so disconnected from what feels great and what feeds our bodies, because we're just, there's mass marketing. From the time you were a kid, you're just like hearing, you want to ba da ba ba ba, you want to get the commercial, yes. you want to get the jingle, and you want to be part of it, and you want to go because, you know, the Hamburglar's got a thing at Burger King now. Whatever it is, you want to be a part of it as a kid. So we are so disconnected from just tuning into how we feel that's almost an unreachable for some people, even though it yeah. should be non-negotiable.
I mean, you know, that makes me think about my grandchild, and I think about food and, you know, how I raised my kids. And I, you know, you were probably similar. I was like, I want to give them, you know, lots of different choices. And, you know, yeah. I didn't let them have sugar until I think they had to go to a birthday party of another friend. And then I was like, look, it's, you know, they're going to be in the world and it's fine. But it was intense, I have to say, because, yeah. you know, they thought rice cakes were cookies, you know, because I was an idiot. Anyway, I think about kids and how we introduce foods to them. Like I yeah. wanted to have variety and this and that. I didn't want to give them sugar and I didn't want to, but then are you being too extreme?
Yeah.
And then you think of convenience and mothers that are working and they have busy jobs. And, you know, I think there are companies out there that really do want to make a difference for mothers, and they try yeah. to provide some interesting like meals and stuff. I was talking to somebody today. She has a company called Joy Foods, I think. And it's a delivery thing. We're here in Los Angeles, which of course you can get deliveries of all kinds of things. But she's starting to give food to the Los Angeles education, you know, like
good.
To the schools. And I was so thrilled. And she said, you know, you made a cookie once, because I used to make these cookies called Bliskits that were sugar-free, gluten-free. They're delicious. And she said, I would love to talk to you about getting those
so
cookies
cool.
in there. And I was like, oh my God, that would be amazing. Because if you give kids healthy choice, I remember when kids would come over to our house and, you know, they were the kind of kids that had, you know, macaroni and cheese every night, or, you know, SpaghettiOs or whatever. And they would come over to our house and I'd make dinner and what have you. And at first they would sit at the table and they would like scrunch their nose up, like, what is that? And I don't have to eat that. My mom doesn't make me eat that. And I was like, okay, well, then I guess you won't eat. But then they'd get hungry and they'd try it. And then they, you know, like kids are pretty resilient. They'll,
yeah.
once they try something and it tastes good, then it's like the lights go on. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying, but You know what I'm saying.
Anyway, you may, just because you can't be vegetarian doesn't mean that it's not for lack of trying. You might want to follow the study and find out.
It is so true. It's like maybe that's not for you, or maybe it is 100% for you.
Yep.
Everybody is different. You know, like we are not made.
One size fits all.
Nope, not at all. Anyway. Stay where you are. If you're just tuning into us, you're listening to Outcomes of Sun Radio. You're listening to Melissa Yamaguchi, my co-host, and I'm Marielle Hemingway. And today, we don't have a guest. We're our own guest. We're going to talk about a show that both Melissa and I have kind of obsessed with. I wonder why I'm so obsessed with this show and why we talk about it. Mm. Billions. Has anybody seen this show, Billions, on Showtime? Okay. Yes, it's had 7 seasons, so you might have run across it. But it's super, the reason why we want to talk about it, it's very brilliantly written. Coming from a family of writers, when somebody uses the writing as a tool to really put information out into the world, I think it's just fascinating. I mean, yes, they're billionaires, and yes, they're living, you know, extravagant lifestyles, and, you know, and they're doing killing deals and stuff. But what I love about the show is how everything is an analogy to a sports thing or some writer or a play that happened in the 1980s. I mean, you can tell they're our generation, not like
some artists, some art, whether it's music or sports or
yeah, culture. Art, culture, sports. And it's so, and very much like, I love America, you know, like it's just, there's something about it that's quite, it's kind of patriotic in a very kind of sinister way.
Well, the show is about, it really is about the premise is about good versus evil. So you've got on the quote unquote good side, you've got this U.S. Attorney General who is really gung-ho about taking down this hedge fund king who he sees as unscrupulous and greedy and everything that he shouldn't be when it comes to honoring this country. And honoring his job and his privilege of having this job in this country. So it starts off where that's the real clear definition between good versus evil. But then as you watch the show, they do this real slippery slip around where now you can't determine whether or not who you're cheering for. Are you cheering for the hedge fund king? Are you cheering for the U.S. Attorney General? And the show, we're in the 7th season right now, so we wouldn't give it away. That was the original premise on season 1. Yes. And as it's morphed and progressed now, it's still the hedge fund king versus the U.S. Attorney General, but it's got this, they've woven in heavy political aspects of our country. They've woven in behind the scenes how things really work when we think, oh, what happened to the XYZ store that used to be such a popular chain? It's gone. You see that the mechanisms behind, all the machinations that make things disappear from our culture, everything that's gone. Where'd that show go? Where's this? And it's intriguing. Yes, the dialogue is quick and fast and exciting and titillating, but the premise of it is really, it's not too far veered from the truth, from reality. This is how things work.
I mean, when you, and it does make you question it, because you do get into a place where you're confused about who you like, you know, because there's always somebody that you root for in a show or in a book. You're like, you're behind the whomever, right? There's always somebody you're kind of rooting for, but it makes you slip on that line of like, oh, I'm actually not loyal to that guy anymore. He's starting to be slippery. Wait, he's pissing me off. I got to go over here.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. But it's also fascinating how, like you said, they, you know, I think in big business, I mean, I don't know much about that, but I imagine that when big money is involved and you can, and when you have big money, those kinds of billions of dollars, you can be a bully. And then you can make it look to yourself, if you're that bully, that you're doing the right thing. right? It's the interest of the bigger picture.
Well, even it's a savior complex.
This guy who has worked his whole life to make a company work, you know, but then this guy comes in and says, I like the concept and I take it over. And it's really interesting because you think, wow, I mean, it's really just the concept of bullying at a higher level, right?
Well, I think what happens when people get into that position is the savior complex. They imagine that they can do better with the product, even if you were the founder and originator of the product, because they have the money and they have the resources and they can get it out wherever it needs to go and they can do better. You've got this product, you've done a good job. Now let me take over. You go away. Here's your money. Let me pay you off and I'm going to take over because it's the savior complex. And this is the challenge that a lot of people have. Listen, let me, true confession here. In our family, my husband's family, the family members will sometimes rely on me to take care of stuff. At the risk of sounding like I'm patting myself too hard on the back, I'm very quick. And that's mostly because I'm very quick, predominantly because I'm impatient. So it's kind of a balance there. Yeah. So I get stuff done because I want it done, not because I'm the genius at the bar. I just want this done. And so they'll have come to rely upon me. And it's hard sometimes, not difficult, but sometimes when I'm thinking, surely I can't be the only one who can take care of this right now. I've got something else I've got to take care of. But I have to watch it that I don't look like I'm rescuing. Because I never want to look like I'm the one rescuing anybody. I can barely throw myself a life preserver. So I think that what it's very easy for people to slide into this role of, I'm going to rescue. I'm going to save this.
God,
and,
I know, and
you see it on this show day in and day on every single episode. There's some from the in-house therapist at the hedge fund at the Capitol to where she's rescuing everybody and she's putting them on track to make them better at their jobs. You see everybody struggling with this because of me. You're as great as you are. Even the father to the U.S. Attorney General, Sonny Boy, you wouldn't be where you are if it weren't for me and all my buddies pulling for you. You hear it everywhere. So it's this constant theme of, to whom do I owe my success? And how big of a role do I play in this play? Am I the main character? Am I a side character? I'm being manipulated. This show brings up so many points and themes that it's hard to not like that.
I think we all have to deal with it. I mean, as you know, and this is slightly confession, but as you know, in Bobby and my life, Bobby is my husband, for lack of a better term. You know, we're at the precipice of starting this very big business, and we've been watching how when people with power come in and how they wield that and how they utilize that, and what do you do, and how do the team members that have been there for a long time, how do they handle that? It's just interesting. Power and money affects people in so many different ways, right? When everybody's in the struggle to get moving, you're all kind of, you know, bounding along like horses on, you know, in a direction.
Yeah.
And then when something happens, when money and power starts to come at you, everybody's true colors really do show.
Oh, sure.
It's very interesting. And that's without judgment, but it is very, people's fears come up, people's anxieties, people's desire, people's longing, people's money grab, people's whatever it is. It's just been, it's interesting. And I think billions has been we're not talking billions, but you know, in this company that Bobby is just about to launch, it's just like, it's very interesting because the human nature is to survive. And these are like, it's like, it becomes very animalistic. I think you lose your sense of like home at a certain level, unless you're just, you know, that's just who you are and it's not going to phase you. But it's very interesting who loses their SHIT first.
the It's funny because we were told that money is what we need, and we do need it. We need it to buy the things we want. And then we're marketed to believe that we need more than what we have. And you can't be content with the clothes you wore last year because they're no longer in season. And then you watch, you can't have last year's iPhone because it's now the battery's shooting out every 5 minutes. You got to get a new one. It's constant. It's constant. So we have this perception that you need money. And so he who has the most money wins.
Yeah.
It's
and that's really, you know, that's the subplot of this is he has the most money wins. Sorry.
Well, and I think when I think of billions, I parallel it to the show Succession in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And Succession, for those who have not seen it, is a show about a family, a conglomerate media family, who is spearheaded by the father. And he has his children, and the children are all vying, A, not only for the dad's attention, but for their succession to the throne. And so it's the show of how cutthroat people are for money, even within their own family. And you and I've talked about that on the show before, at the time of funerals and wills and everything that come out, how people rear their ugly heads when you never knew that it existed. It's like you're in some really bad Othello play.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Yeah, that show, if you haven't seen that, that's worth turning into. For number one, the writing is exquisite again, and the dialogue is insane. It's so good, and it's so sharp. I mean, talk about if words had like literally like blades, were blades and edges, you would be scratched and bleeding, you know, if you were in that room. It's just a very interesting show. And that's a really interesting show to watch, people's human behavior, how people behave even when they are family members. And you see them go through a loss, you know, a loss of a family member, and how they handle that. And then their kind of guttural desire to still keep the engine moving, which is this powerful money machine that they all are a part of, and how they all want to be at the helm. It's just so
and the siblings who have been raised with all this millions of dollars their entire life, highly privileged with their own private planes and so forth, highly privileged and catered to by every diplomat known to the world because they want to have the father's favor on the network. These children who supposedly have this elite position on life, and how they will make fun of someone's bag because looks like it's a knockoff designer bag, or if it's too big, too gauche of a designer bag at an event, have this faux sense of elegance, class, and style when they have absolutely none of it. They possess none of it, but it's all this fake. They've been coddled to so heavily their entire lives that they have this fake sense of elegance when they possess none of it.
Yeah, that's it. You're so right. It's so true. They're like, they're casting aspersions on everybody.
Yes.
And yet you just want to go, wait, will you turn around and look at yourself? You're absolutely foolish. But it is totally the funniest thing ever. I mean, brilliant, brilliant writing in something that, you know, in two shows that really are about, you know, because I think as Americans, as humans, we long to know what it's like to, if you didn't have any money worries, right? So this is a jump. Now, it's an extreme jump into what it must be like if people were just so cutthroat and like nothing mattered but the mighty dollar and winning in the end. And that's really what these two shows are about. Now, is that realistic? I hope not. I hope that, but I imagine that there are many people who carry those kinds of positions that are probably pretty cutthroat. They, you know, what's the old saying? And behind every great fortune is a great crime.
Right, right, you know? Right. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah. Maybe it's
well, it makes you think, because we, in our quest to be like someone else, and to even for a moment sitting on our couch watching a film or watching a show, imagine we're in part of that world because we're being exposed to it, even through writing. It's the same reason that people fell in love with Great Gatsby. We dive into this, and all of a sudden we're there, and we're part of that whole jazz era, and we're part of all the money and Gatsby, and we're Gatsby craving to have Daisy pay attention to us. So we long for it, But the happiest among us seem to have no concept of what it is and don't really even care.
Well, you know what's interesting? It makes me think of my grandfather's book, A Movable Feast, which, as you know, is a favorite of mine. I own the rights to making it into something, hopefully a limited series. But anyway, but my grandfather talks about, because when he was, you know, because it's really the concept, A Movable Feast is really my grandfather in the 20s in Paris and him coming of age. He went there on the, you know, with the money that my grandmother had inherited from her father, which wasn't very much, but it was a little bit of money that got them to Paris, and they could live off that so meagerly. And my grandfather, Pop at the time, 22 years old, Hadley was 31. She was 9 years older. And it's him coming of age, but he talked about as things progressed, and he met, you were talking about The Great Gatsby, he met, you know, Fitzgerald, and he started meeting these fantastic artists and these interesting people. And Gertrude Stein was a great thinker, and the artist Picasso, and all these different people that he started to meet. But then he started to meet the wealthy people that also kind of joined in. He called them the pilot fish. You know, like he talked about them as like, you know, like you knew, or the pilot fish might have been the representation that the wealthy were in the wings. I'm not, you know, I probably have a bad interpretation, so those Hemingwayophiles out there, don't get mad at me. But the idea of, and he had this kind of inherent fear of those people that never had to work very hard.
Yeah.
That it was too easy for. And I think we all hold a little bit of judgment towards people that it's super easy, like never had to work for, you know, whatever. I think,
you know, I think the phrase no pain, no gain is not just for working out. You've got to go through something, or you've got to forge the steel. You have to forge the steel and strike it in order to make it sharper. And that's how we become our best selves, is by, there's something so gratifying about realizing how strong you are and how capable you are. You can do it. That's our, if anything, that is the mantra of America, is that you can do this. Yeah. We are a young country, 100%. But we can do this. You can do it.
Absolutely. And thank God that we have, at least we have that. You know, I think it makes everybody believe that they can be something in the world. You know, I mean, there, you know, Tom Albert, our friend Tom Albert, who has a company out of...
who I often confuse with Tom Arnold for no other reason than that.
I said that the other day. Bobby asked me and he goes, do you have Tom Albert's number? And I said, just a second. I said, here's Tom Albert or Tom Arnold's number. And he was like, Tom Arnold? I was like, whatever. I have his number.
Sorry, Tom.
I don't know why. But but anyway, what was I saying?
Tom, you were talking to Tom Albert the other day.
I was talking to Tom Albert. And he said, you know, his daughters, he did something that one is an actress and the other one is just so into, like, she wants to be successful and she's, you know, really focused. They're teenagers and they're really focused on their career trajectory and how they're, and he said to his youngest, you know what, so what do you want to be? And she's like, I'm going to be the first female president of the United States. And she was so, and I heard it because she was on the phone. It was in the background. And it was so, she was delivering, she was focused, and it was like, you're not going to get in my way. It was very funny. But I think as Americans, inherently, we believe that we can be that. And thank God for that, you know?
And why shouldn't we?
It's not a monarchy where you can't possibly, unless you've got, you're part of a bloodline. So it's really interesting. I don't know, but that.
Well, according to billions, you'll have to cater to a certain group of people before that's even a consideration.
Well, yeah. I mean, the special clubs and stuff. Woo. Oh, that's so fascinating. Yeah, I love this kind of conversation because I love it because it does make me think of my grandfather. I think of my grandfather being in Paris in the 20s, you know, and he was starving before he made it, you know, but everybody thinks that he never suffered. I mean, he was there. They didn't have any food. They lived over a sawmill, you know, and the cat was the babysitter of my dad, who was in a bassinet. And, you know, they lived such a very simple life. This was him before he became something. And I always appreciated the fact that he was very wary of somebody. And I think that was his desire for courage, his desire for things that made you think outside the box, that made you a little bit afraid, that made you have to step up into yourself.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's the reason why your grandfather was known as such a great American writer, because he tapped into the grit and the total vein of the great American message. He was able to explain it and speak it from first person, exactly how the grit that we see as who we really are, the representation of what America really is. That's why he's so beloved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and there's so many different facets to that. You know what was there? Oh, did I tell you this? When we had Ron Hirschberg on for Home Base, and he does a lot of work with people that come back from, you know, war, and, you know, for PTSD and the SEAL team and all these different facets of the army and the government and the military. And he said something so sweet. And we were talking about my grandfather, and he said, I want to thank you because you're a family of service. And I never, and my dad went to World War II as well. And I never heard that. And it touched me so
deeply,
because I never had thought of my family as people that went to war for the country. Right. I had never put my head around it like that. My father, you know, I think of my father as going to World War II and jumping out of a plane with a fly rod into France. And then I think he became hostage after a while, but I think he got a bunch of fish beforehand. Anyway, but I mean, I never thought of him as a veteran. And that was so, I actually welled up when he said it. I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. He said, I want to thank you for, you know, being a family of service. I was like, wow.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I never even really thought much about it either, because my family, my dad wasn't active. And so we weren't going from base to base to base and transferring around. But then somebody was talking to me about, gosh, I don't even remember. It wasn't that long ago. I'm going to say within the last 5 years. When the people would post stuff on social media about Veterans Day and thanks to our veterans. Yes. And I started thinking about, my father was in the Army. Oh, wait, my stepfather was in the Marines. Oh, hang on a minute. My father-in-law is in the Air Force. Wow. You don't even, shame on me. I always had respect for what they had done, but I never considered beyond that was a job they had before I knew them. Right. It's interesting. And I do remember him saying that. And it was that was a poignant moment.
Yeah.
Your grandfather he wrote so beautifully. I didn't know about your father, but your grandfather wrote so beautifully about his firsthand experience in the war.
He really did. And I think he felt that was such an important part of who he had become. I mean, kind of coming full circle back to these strange shows, Billions and Succession. It's like they almost have a missing piece of, have you done something for somebody else truly? Like without gaining something, without it being about money, without it being about the fame, without.
That's exactly right.
Just to do, right? And there are some, you know, I think there are some celebrities that do some pretty amazing things in the world, and they don't tell people about it. And I love those stories, and I love hearing that. And because I think that's actually just the most honorable thing you can do. But I like that. I like that people, I mean, I don't like that people have suffered, but I think that it is our suffering that teaches us the most about our happiness. You know, it's like when you can touch on, oh, well, I made it through that, and look what was on the other side. And And perhaps I can look at what was so painful and realize that I don't have to do that again.
No, true. Well, you know, it makes me think of talking about Billions in Succession, or that makes me think of the late great Dorothy Parker when she said, "Poor thing, all he has is money."
Yeah, yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yep. Is that Daisy on the floor behind you? Just out of curiosity.
Actually, that's Mao, is the cat.
Yeah, but
what's on the ground is Daisy's stuffed animal.
I thought Daisy is asleep and has been such a good girl this whole show.
She's asleep on the couch. She's very far back. When she plays with that stuffed animal, which by the way is a little bit bigger than her, it is the funniest thing. She wrestles it as though it's moving. It's quite funny. Anyway, well, listen, everyone, this was, I find conversations like this fascinating because I think we're all fascinated by, I don't know, by the things that we're exposed to. And when you get exposed to things that are well done and interesting, I think it's great to be able to take something away from that. I mean, I've been in the entertainment industry my whole life to a certain degree. And when you can actually give something to people and have them take it away with them, that's pretty cool. You know, it's not very often that people get to do things that stick with somebody for a long time. So it's nice. So I applaud them for for doing what they did.
Keep on doing it. Keep on writing. Tomorrow I can talk about it.
Keep on keeping on. Well, that's kind of the end of our discussion. Do we have any, like, what do we want to talk about? It is fall. We don't have to have a tip today, but I think that we should just honor the fact that it is October.
Yep.
October. And I'm going to bring up something that I think everybody is aware of. Fall, many people start to get a little bit, you know, they'll have sore throats, get a little sick. It's the change of seasons. It happens all the time. It's a really good time. Your immune system is actually getting stronger. But I've had a bit of a sore throat for the last few days. Nothing horrible. I'm not like in bed, but you know, and sometimes I get frustrated and then I remind myself that this is that time of the year. This is when you need to be a little bit mindful of it's colder in the morning, it's cooler at night, you know, don't have a draft on you. Just be aware that your body needs this shift and it might get a little immune deficient at times and you may be a little weaker, but it will build back up because that's kind of what season changing is about. It's when people start to get sick, but don't be afraid of that because that actually builds your immune system.
Exactly right.
You can't be afraid to breathe in the air of other people. We need that.
I remember getting a sore throat or a runny nose around the time of the seasons would change. And my mom would say, "Good, you're getting ready."
Yeah.
So we never were, you just weren't afraid of it. It just happens. Seasons change and you're going to either sneeze or something's going to happen. And you'll be ready for the rest of it. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. That brings up something. It's just so fascinating that Kenny Kane, a friend of ours, who's a wonderful trainer. He has two boys. And because of COVID-19, you know, the kids were at home, like everybody's kids, and they were homeschooling and doing whatever they did. And for 2 years, and they kind of didn't really go back to school last year, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't, but they just didn't. And they did go back last year, excuse me. And it was after the whole COVID lockdown, 2 years of being at home, and their immune systems were weaker. And kids, you know, as much as we hated it when our kids were smaller and they always came home with the flu always, right? And you were strong and usually mom didn't get it. I never got it, you know, like very rarely.
Yeah.
But they need that. So it was really interesting. He was saying that last year was such a challenging year. And I wonder if anybody listening had this problem with their kids or their grandkids or whatever. That the kids got so sick, they were constantly having to go home because they got everything that year because the year before they had not been exposed to anything. Isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating.
Our bodies really, you know, these are natural ways our bodies kind of work into the world, right? We need We need germs, we need bacteria, we need all of it. We need it because humans grow and develop and build an immune system by being exposed.
Well,
you know, and, unless you're immunocompromised or have a serious something.
Well, I heard a doctor speak one time, a female doctor, who was saying that she thinks we've done a huge disservice to our girls because we put too much emphasis on them always smelling good and always looking pretty and not having anything dirty. And I don't want anybody riding into the show and going loco on me here to putting the proverbial liner down on the toilet before you sit down. And she's like, the truth of the matter is a little bit of dirt, a little bit of whatever is not, it's going to make you stronger and more resilient. You've got to stop babying and you've got to stop teaching our girls. It was a conference I went to about women. And she's got to stop teaching our girls to be so afraid of dirt and so afraid of having a little bit of,
My God. And I have to say that, you know, in my period of being obsessed with food, like full circle to the beginning of our show, I was also at the same time extremely afraid of germs. I was the girl that closed the door with the paper towel and this and that. And, you know, I was terrified. And I think it was because I was not, you know, the food was out of balance. I was like, I was scared. You live it. And what it does is it creates a world of fear inside of you. And I think it is a disservice to kids to make them afraid to just be kids and touch the monkey bars and do the things that we need to do as kids. Cause those germs actually, your microbiome is built by having, you know, if you have animals in your house, it helps your microbiome.
I can already see. There's going to be a meme on the internet. It's going to be you swinging from a monkey bar and it's going to be like, touch the monkey bar. Don't be afraid. Touch the monkey bar.
with a cat in my hand. For Daisy swinging from the
Daisy and her toy,
yes, that is bigger than her. This is an awesome show. I'm always happy to be here. I'm always happy to share information about, you know, our lives, but also, again, this is a show that is kind of based around mental health. And mental health is everything you do. It's how you wake up in the morning, whether you drink water, get sunshine in your eyes, earth, or whatever you do. Life is about everything you do, and your mental well-being is about becoming aware of your life from every single aspect of it. So remember that Outcomes of Sun also helps bring awareness to the Mariel Hemingway Foundation, which is a resource navigator for mental health. That's what we want to create. It is not created yet. So those of you that have asked me where can, you know, like, I don't find anything. No, you haven't found anything yet, because we have to raise money in order to create that resource navigator, but we will. I mean, we're getting close. And it's wonderful because we do have a wealth of information that once we do launch it, it will be exciting for people to be able to see where they can go if they're dealing with a loved one that is mentally unstable or having suicide ideation or addiction or whatever it is that they're dealing with in the mental health realm. We'll be able to point them in direction for the help that they need or that they want. And again, just like the body, the mind, you know, you will find that solution that suits you or your loved one. So anyway, thank you all so very much. Go to the Mariel Hemingway Foundation.org if you want to donate or just see kind of what our mission statement is, and always listen to Outcomes of Sun because we're always here to give you, you know, just a good time for an hour. Thank you, everyone.